Welcome back to Uncanny Tracks covers the Penguin, but not just the Penguin, also the Nicholas Windig Refn show Too Old to Die Young on Amazon Prime. I'm Bob in Cascadia, that's Matt in the Southland, and tonight we are talking about episode 6 of both shows, Gold Summit for Penguin, The High Priestess for Too Old to Die Young. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. While The High Priestess was much more tolerable this week than last week's crazy nastiness that went on with our Nicholas Windig Refn show, I gotta say, Gold Summit wasn't too bad either, Bob.
I thought Gold Summit was pretty bad, Matt.
How many episodes do we get in The Penguin?
8, just 8, so 2 more.
Wow, okay. So, and coming up on the end here.
Yeah. We got, I guess, of Too Old to Die Young, so we'll cover episode 9 and 10 together after The Penguin is done. But yeah, we've only got 2 more of The Penguin. Yeah, man, I don't like to be a hater of The Penguin. I wanted to like this show, but we'll get into it. But I just don't feel like it's doing anything. What's the purpose? And I should have known this. When you say, oh, you're going to make an 8-episode miniseries about a side character in between him being in 2 movies, of course they're not going to do anything. Why would I expect they're going to do anything? Do you think Sal Maroney, Sophia's partner Sal, was he watching Sophia bone a bound Doctor Strange?
It's possible, Bob. He may be into that kind of stuff. I'm not sure, but we're not sure that's Doctor Strange, correct?
We're not. I just can't remember what else his name was, and I would prefer to call him by Doctor Strange than whatever his actual name is.
We're thinking that, yes, this character will be revealed later on, probably to be Doctor Strange.
At this point, I'm actually thinking no. I'm thinking if they were going to do it, they probably already would have.
I'm not so sure, Bob. I think we're going to find out. I'm going to tell you this, though. Doctor Strange has become, like, way more commonplace within the Batman mythos, in my opinion. Spoilers, there was a recently released 89 sequel that I just finished up, and the main villain in that story ends up being Strange, which I thought was weird.
I didn't really need the origin of the Batman 89 Clayface, but I was debating, spoilers, I guess, for the prologue, but I was debating about reading more. And my first instinct when you said that, put that in the notes, was to be annoyed, to be irritated. But I'm controlling my emotions. I'm reflecting on my emotions. I'm actually grateful that you spoiled it for me, because I don't want to read a Batman 89 novel about Doctor Strange. I'm going to delete that file from my computer as soon as we jump off.
Man, Bob, and I actually paid for this one.
I didn't pay for this one. I know about tie-in novels. Don't pay for them, folks. They're not good.
Strange also plays like a predominant role in both Arkham City. And really, I feel like the Monster Men have reached like B-level status villains in the DCU at this point.
I would agree with you that Strange is pretty prominent. I didn't know he was in Arkham City, but I would credit that to the video game and the early 90s animated series. He's a good villain who shows up every now and again. The 70s Strange Apparitions and the 80s Prey series are both pretty responsible for that. He debuted one of the earliest Batman stories and then didn't show up again until the 70s. The Monster Men, they were the bad guys in a crossover about 10 years ago, but I don't expect that'll ever happen again.
They've been reintroduced in other mediums.
What other? Did they show up in Arkham?
There was a whole film. Yeah, they show up in Arkham. There's a whole damn film on the Bob.
What film?
Isn't it Batman and the Monster Men? Isn't that a legit film that just came out a long ago? That animated film.
There's the short film they made for the 75th anniversary of Batman that where it's Strange and the Monster Men. Yeah, that's like 3 minutes.
Yeah, that was awesome. I really remember that. But I'm talking about something completely different. I'm talking like a legit thing we covered with the Monster Men. Did we not? Or am I just making this up?
I want to say you're insane, but I'm also not totally sure. It might be that I'm just forgetting something really obvious. Listeners, forgive us as we take a minute to confirm or deny. Which of us is insane, Matt or Bob? That's always the real question of this podcast. Yeah. I made you watch that short film for Cape Crusader.
Yeah, but it was only like 3 minutes.
It's the same style as Cape Crusader.
In the grand scheme of things, I'm just saying, I've seen more Hugo Strange and Monster Men in my life than I'm accustomed to.
Were they in the Justice League Gods and Monsters? Are you thinking of, we didn't cover it, but are you thinking of the Matt Wagner comic?
Yeah, I mean, I read the Matt Wagner comic as a kid. Well, Wolver.
Well, wasn't it as a kid? You know what I mean? We were in our 20s, I think.
It had really cool with the horse.
It was great. I like the sequel, The Mad Monkey, then better. Listeners, I'm going to tentatively declare that Matt's insane and I'm not insane, but if anybody can correct that and prove that I'm insane, I welcome it. You can have Hugo Strange without the Monster Men. Can you have the Monster Men without Hugo Strange? I would tend to say no.
2000.
Matt, also speaking of failing memories, you gave us a perfect transition. So Ma Penguin, she's got a new boy, Matt. She's got a new son. How you feel about that?
She really does. Well, we kind of saw this a little bit the last episode where Vic, he's playing that role of the empathetic son, which Penguin just can't be.
Also, he's just so busy, Matt. He's always scheming. He's always hustling. He's always going for the next thing. Right? Always got to be on the make in Gotham. I did like how more distracted Vic get this episode, especially when he's talking to Penguin and he's just like, yeah, big money, good stuff. And just the lack of conviction in that really made me laugh.
Later on in the episode, Bobby is either shoot like some dude in the face and wants to move in on his turf.
See, that's part of what I don't like about this miniseries is I'm fine with the Penguin having a young sidekick. That's fine. But making it into like the corruption of the sidekick, it's just so tedious.
Well, he's got to go somewhere and they only have 8 episodes. So we had to have him do something.
Go ahead and have him start out just being a gangster. He's just a guy who wants to be on the make. He sees potential in Penguin. Boom. Much more interesting character. Gives me a lot of bad, pointless angst scenes.
He's not just running around shooting people, blowing their heads off and stuff, yeah. You didn't like the whole scene where Penguin had to hug him and tell him it's okay and everything's going to be all right? I remember my first kill. It's rough. You'll get over it.
In the broader context of a show where he's just a gangster, that could also be fine. It's been 6 episodes of, oh, I'm a bad guy. Is he going to get away from Oz? And of course he's not. The show's called The Penguin. We find out the names of the brothers that we didn't really know before, Jack and Rex Cobblepot. But apparently they're both dead. And then I did just want to flag Tom King's The Penguin comic, which just ended. I thought was awful. I thought it was one of the worst things I've read in a while. Matt would probably like it. It's basically a sequel to another pretty bad Tom King comic called Killing Time. So Matt liked Killing Time for some ungodly, unaccountable reason. So maybe he would like The Penguin by Tom King. This is a sequel to that. But I bring it up because it's called The Penguin, but B, because The Penguin's family factors heavily into that comic too. It almost to the point where, you know how like the theme of Spider-Man is, oh, we're getting all these other new Spider-Men. The theme of Batman is, oh, how many Robins can you stick in there? Oh, let's do that with a Penguin, but there's family members.
You know, people we can show in the families.
How many derivative characters can we have for cheap IP?
Like a damn clown car.
It is a clown car of Cobblepots, Matt. But I would say the interesting thing though is that the family members in The Penguin, the comic, are very different than the family members in Penguin, the show. There's almost like no similarity between the characters.
Well, they're all dead here, though, if I'm saying it.
They're all, yeah.
Yeah, well, in spoilers, a lot of them wind up dead by the end of the Tom King, The Penguin comic. But it's just very different set of family members. Don't ask me specifically who they are, because I can barely remember. I've made a conscious effort since finishing that comic of trying to forget it. Although if Matt thinks it would be good radio, I will reread it and discuss it on air with you. I do appreciate that Killing Time does the Long Halloween in 6 issues instead of 13. Props to that. It's still pretty boring, though.
Well, all this information that, Bob, you were telling us, this is all coming from Sophia, okay?
And mm-hmm.
We also hear Sophia say that Penguin's mother is dead.
Which, obviously, she's not. It does lead me to think that the Penguin has carefully cultivated saying that his mother is dead so that she will not be a target.
Yes, that's what I was looking for, too. This is just, yeah. This is when we find this out. Because I don't remember him specifically saying anything to her about his mom being deceased.
It's entirely possible I could have forgotten both the Monster Men in some sort of cartoon movie and this fact. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't think the show has brought it up. Which that would also, not that it's the hugest deal in the world, but I think that would just be an example of how the show's not very good at plotting. Because, like, you should establish a secret and then have the character discover the secret, you know?
Is his mother been hidden since the beginning of the show? Like, from everyone?
I think he's hidden her away from everyone in the mob, and he's been doing it since long before the show started. That's my interpretation. It does raise the question of, are Jack and Rex, in fact, not dead either? Which I don't think the show's going to go there with only 2 episodes left, but I just raise it as, given that we know that Penguin is, you know, deceiving people about Ma Penguin being alive, maybe there's something going on with Jack and Rex too.
We'll talk about it at the end when I give you my prediction for what I think might happen.
Oh, Matt has a prediction. Happy days, happy days. One bit of the episode I did like is when the Penguin is just like hanging in a pinky. meaning that Sophia both was hanged people and they cut off their pinkies. He's just like, Jesus, Sophia, pick a fucking lane.
If you're hanging somebody, you have the pinky is something you take with you. That's the mint. You can't take the whole body with you if you hang somebody.
You know, Matt, I just want to point out that last week's episode was about porn and also sexual assault, right? Because of the Too Old to Die Young.
You're right.
But this week, Matt's like, oh, man, what a wholesome week we have as we talk about just taking pinkies as souvenirs. And we're about to get into some mother-son incest. Yeah. Matt's just all about the incest and the pinky removal.
What does that tell you about the quality of Lad, the last episode of Nicholas Windegreffen's Too Old to Die Young, Bob?
Do you feel like Sophia and the Penguin are a better team, or do you feel like Sophia and Sal Maroney are a better team?
Okay, I really wanted to see more of Sophia and Penguin just because I like their dynamic, and it didn't last very long. But knowing this on eight episodes, I see why they went ahead and split them and had them go their separate ways and brought in Sal as her basically just taking the place of Penguin at this point, just to see how. I think Penguin and Sophia would have been more interesting if we could have had it go a little longer.
My boy and I, who I watched Penguin with, we were getting fun Better Call Saul vibes off of Sophia and the Penguin. Uh-huh. And so we were a little sad that that was so short-lived. Matt, did you enjoy the Penguin going to town with the pliers on that guy?
I did. Bob, when you see stuff like that, does your brain give you like a tiny like sampling of the pain when you see it? Just like a millisecond, you're just like, you can kind of feel it.
I don't like feel the pain, but I do wince in sympathy.
Yeah, I'm to the point now where when I see things like that, that's what happens. Just it's strange. Well, it did dawn on me last night, Bob, that because I had to go back and I had to rewatch this episode because it airs on Sundays. And by the next week, when we're going to discuss it, I can't remember. So please, HBO, consider putting this on like a Thursday and go back to putting like Sex in the City or some shit on Sunday.
Well, it's sad because Sunday night, traditionally, that is HBO's big drama night, right? I watched The Wire and Boardwalk Empire and Tremé on Sunday nights. But for our podcast purposes, as people who have jobs are on different sides of the country who can't easily record until the weekend, it's rough. Matt, I'm honestly to the point where I don't know if I want us to ever do a Sunday night show again.
It dawned on me that Penguin is underground the same way that Danny DeVito's Penguin in Batman Returns was. He is in the little sewer hideout.
That's a great connection. The most proximate reference there is probably Batman Returns, and that is pretty funny.
Seeing his gang transporting the mushrooms through the sewers, but I was disappointed because they're not dressed as circus performers.
Matt, were you inspired by what to me felt like the climax of this episode when the Penguin solves racism over cheap beers, when he gives everybody a cheap beer and unites the underling gangs of Gotham?
It was definitely the most blue-collar mob I've seen in quite a while, Bob. Definitely some three-color munch.
I don't buy it. This scene is actually why I hated the episode. I thought it was so weak. We don't know who any of these characters are. To the extent we have seen a couple of them, like the younger triad guy, they've established no actual traits about them. I'm also annoyed because the Penguin spent the whole series playing Iago from Othello, basically. He's always scheming and lying to people.
Yeah.
And now he's trying to switch to Shakespeare's Henry, and this is supposed to be a St. Crispin's Day speech about how everybody's always going to remember this. And no, they're not. Nobody cares, man. You're a mob leader in one of 20 cities in America. Nobody's ever going to remember this. Shut up.
I think that's the point, Bob. The people he had there were no names because that's how low he's had to sink himself to where he's able to get them. These people to work for him is through his veers and his like trite speeches in the underground.
Look, there's a lot of good performances in this show, especially the actress playing Sophia and Colin Farrell playing Penguin. Also the actress playing Penguin's mom, I think, are all very good. But for an 8-episode show, it's wasted so much time on such like stupid stuff. Why have the arc of will Vic be a bad guy or won't Vic be a bad guy? I don't know. Use some of that time to actually establish the world you want. The entire show to me has just been a kind of waste of time.
Well, I'm impressed as though with the show, how they've wiped out all these mob people and completely changed up like just the mob climate of the city that we didn't really know much about from the Batman, but now we know more about it. It accomplished something.
It did basically nothing with these mob characters. They hung around and were bland for 2 to 4 episodes, and then Sophia killed them.
Which I think is the point of what they're just fodder, Bob. They're fodder, and Penguin and Sophia are the two characters you really need to care about.
You need fodder in stories, but at some point you need like actual characters too. A really good organized crime show like Breaking Bad or Gomorrah or The Sopranos you care about the characters you are watching, even if they then get killed off. And this show just, it's not that well written. That's also why I'm cranky about it. Organized crime shows are some of the best TV shows on TV historically. You get Sopranos, Breaking Bad, right. Gomorrah. These are amazing shows. And this is, well, not a terrible show, mediocre to a little below mediocre. And I was maybe hoping, especially given that Colin Farrell is doing such a Robert De Niro and James Gandolfini imitation variously, I was maybe hoping we'd get something a little more than that.
See, I think that's where, I don't think your expectations of it being the Sopranos for Batman, I think may have just been a little too high.
But you shouldn't put it on HBO and you shouldn't have Colin Farrell doing a James Gandolfini impersonation. You just put it on Max, you don't make it an HBO show. Given my frustrations with the show, I really do hope Sophia just crowbars Ma Penguin and Vic next episode. Even though I like Ma Penguin, I just want to see Sophia take a crowbar to her.
Bob, here's where my prediction comes in, Bob. I think them brothers are going to show up.
Oh, you do think they're going to show up?
Guess what? They're not dead either. They're going to help Ma Penguin make sure Sophia doesn't crowbar him.
The thing is that they're definitely going to be dead before the show's over.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the point? What's the point of bringing them for two episodes, an episode and a half? Just no point.
It's not happening. I'm just kidding, Bob.
Okay.
Complete sarcasm, Bob. Sorry.
Do you have an actual prediction to hit us with?
Ma Penguin's going to die. I know that much. Vic is going to make it out somehow.
I think you're right, but I want him to die. Yeah. I'm really rooting for him to die.
I'm thinking Vic is going to learn something about Penguin from Sophia that is going to change his perception or his understanding of Penguin, similar to what happened with his hooker, the little friend, or whatever I can't remember her name.
I remember that her last name was Carlo. My prediction is we're going to see a little Killer Croc cameo.
Killer Croc's going to show a little post-credit scene with the Riddler.
You assume Sophia's not going to make it out of the show either, right?
I don't. She could make it, Bob.
Would they really use her in Batman 2? You have such an extensive backstory from her such that she would need to watch this miniseries to have any affection at all for her character. Do you really think they would use her for Batman 2?
I don't think they're going to bring up the Gigante. They might bring up the Gigante family.
I assume that Colin Farrell Penguin survives to also show up in a minor role in Batman 2, especially after Sophia presumably crowbars Ma Penguin. It's hard to imagine how Sophia and Penguin can coexist in the same city. And I also think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think DC will have learned the lesson of the MCU, which is don't make movies that depend on your audience having to watch an 8-hour miniseries.
That's true.
Looking at you, Captain America 4, looking at you, Captain Marvel 2, looking at you, Doctor Strange 2.
They're world building and we'll still have maybe a mention of Sophia Gigante.
I don't think they actually are world building, not in the sense the MCU or the Snyder or the James Gunn universe do, because it seems obviously this version of Batman is only going to go as long as Matt Reeves wants to make them. And then they'll quietly just shift back to only focusing on like the James Gunn Batman movies. Does that make sense?
Probably so, especially considering that James Gunn, I think this week even mentioned that the new Batman that they're coming out with is going to be diametrically the opposite of Pattinson's. It's going to be Batman and Robin doing wacky stuff. Bob, and I've noticed this with your opinion of this show, is that it's dwindled as this has gone on. You don't like it as much anymore. That it had a strong start, but has quickly digressed.
I liked some things about the beginning, but there were also some things about it. That god-awful car chase.
This is the same opinion a lot of the bigger like published companies, the bigger reviewers had. Concerning the series, they had seen the entire series beforehand, and they did say that overall the series, they were giving it a 5 out of 10, whereas the first couple of episodes they were dropping and getting an 8 out of 10.
The fans went crazy over, was it just 2 weeks ago that we had Sophia in Arkham?
Yes.
The fans went crazy over that episode. Are they still going crazy over the newer ones, or have they cooled down?
They cooled down, which is what I'm saying. I feel like the end of the season is getting weaker.
I didn't think that Sophia Arkham episode was all that. It was solid, but rating it the best episode of television ever is disgusting. And I will say, as a counterpoint, though, I'm really unenthusiastic about this. I've talked to 4 other friends who all like it significantly more than I do. In fairness, this is a hard thing to do. Do an 8-episode miniseries that can fit between 2 movies, but also doesn't step on the toes of the second movie. Not really an ideal situation to make a good miniseries.
Never.
Well, Matt, should we transition to an actually good miniseries, at least in my opinion?
Sure, Bob. We can transition to that show.
So we've got The High Priestess, episode 6 of Too Old to Die Young. And Matt, I mean, I don't know if you felt personally attacked by this, but it was amazing how the show just opens with Nicholas Winding Refn copying your wedding for this cartel wedding in the desert.
I'm not sure I would want to show up to a wedding in the middle of the desert. It freaks me.
Wow. Not that I'm ever going to have a wedding, Matt, but okay, I can't have it in the desert won't come.
Don't have it in the desert. It's really freaky.
You got to do it for the aesthetic, Matt. You got to do it all for the aesthetic. So Yangster's name is Damien, but we're just going to call him Dr. Mbinga. Are you a fan of Dr. Mbinga's underhanded machete style as he's chopping down that fruit?
Yeah, this man is literally playing Fruit Ninja out in, like, the middle of an alleyway where everyone could see him from the main road. I was all excited because I was like, oh yeah, he's playing Fruit Ninja. Fruit Ninja dropped in 2010.
Is that an ad campaign for like fruit roll-ups or something? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it was a game on phones where like they would fruit would show up on your screen. You had to quickly slash it with your finger on the screen and it would break it.
That sounds terrible.
Well, Bob, the thing is, it's 14 years old and I'm acting like it came out yesterday. That's the problem.
Do you think that this scene in the context of the TV, in the context of the TV show is Damien, Dr. Mbinga, really likes playing Fruit Ninja, but he's, you know what? I'm a bad man. I'm a gangster. I can do Fruit Ninja in real life. Do you think that's the thought process of Damien's character?
That really is the thought process of Damien's character, yes. And I would love to hear Dr. Mbinga just say the words Fruit Ninja.
With his wonderful, mellifluous Nigerian accent. So the ska song playing while they play Fruit Ninja is Rough and Tough by Stranger Cole. Very cool song. And then we have a different very cool ska song when we have the hit go down, but before the hit goes down, Dr. Mbinga and his guys are just dancing in the street to a song called The Ten Commandments by Prince Buster. And it's such a cool and haunting image. But it's also, the song is so good, but it's an evil song, man. It's this guy basically telling his girlfriend, I'm your God. You have to follow all of my Ten Commandments. It's evil, man. It is an evil song.
Yeah. All right. If you're listening to this podcast, go on Spotify, type in Ten Commandments, and you'll get this long list of church-related songs about the Ten Commandments. Make sure you put in Buster and then play.
I got to find Prince Buster.
Yes, put Buster in there. I listened to the whole thing because I caught pieces of it while trying to watch the show.
Are there other songs, Matt, that you like, but if you just look at the lyrics, it's objectively just horrible and indefensible? There's a famous song by the Crystals produced by Phil Spector, who else, that's called He Hit Me and It Felt Like a Kiss. I would put that in the same category as this Ten Commandments song. All right. Well, one other thing about the Ten Commandments is that we have Dr. Mbinga walking down the street, just John Wooing while the song is still playing. Matt, do you know what John Wooing is?
Yeah, I wanted you to explain the John Wooing to the job.
John Wooing is when you're firing a handgun in each hand. John Woo's a famous Hong Kong film director.
Yeah,
and he made a lot of great Hong Kong movies, especially in the 80s. Although he's still active, at least he was still active fairly recently. He might be too old to be active now, but yeah, that was one of his signature things. Matt, I haven't been timing it this season or this miniseries. You know, a lot of times it does feel a long time until they show us the title "Too Old to Die Young," but it was literally 20 minutes this episode, which feels like a record for the show.
Yeah, when it showed up on the screen, I like, wait a minute, I thought we already skipped the title.
Matt, we know this is sort of set in Los Angeles. But did you feel like it was transporting you back to our home in Georgia when we have a old white woman just walk into some place she's not supposed to be and then be awkwardly racist? Did that really make you feel, oh man, this is some Georgia realism?
It really did, Bob. They got Morgan Fairchild to Bob to play this role. Morgan Fairchild.
I don't know her.
Bob, she's known for soap opera. She was in Dallas. She's all in the Lifetime of Hallmark movies.
It sounds like it's good casting.
I was, wow, how long did they get her on this show? And then they got one of the Baldwin brothers as well, which makes me think, okay,
maybe Nicholas Winding Refn has that Lifetime connect.
Yeah, I just can't imagine Morgan Fairchild, like, looking at the script for the show and being like, oh, I could do that.
You know, I've actually thought about getting into Dallas just as a historical interest. It was arguably the most important show of the 80s.
It really was. I mean, it's still talked about today.
Matt, did you like how feminine and lovingly shot Jesus is for this entire episode?
Well, I'm not going to lie. When he was shaving his underleg after the scene of Yuritsa in the shower, I thought it was fur at first. Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. He did that on purpose.
when I first watched this back in 2019 with my boy, we were both wolf whistling at the screen a lot at Jesus in this episode, which has really interesting gender politics to it. I also really did enjoy the scene of his old friend Dante hitting up Jesus and Yuritsa at the supermarket and Dante just being like, yeah, it's great that you're married. You think I can still get some coke, though?
You knew he was going to hit him up when he saw him in the store. Were you nervous?
Oh, for sure.
Were you nervous when he was walking by that dude in the shopping center?
I can remember being lustful for Jesus in 2019. I probably was a little unnerved by it back in 2019, but it's hard to remember.
Something's going to happen. All it is a shot of Jesus and his wife walking down the frozen food aisle, and this dude is like sticking his head in the frozen food. And he can tell that he starts to notice who Jesus is, like, as he slowly is making his way. And it seems like it goes on for 15 minutes, but it doesn't.
I think it's
more like 10 seconds, but I just feel like he's going to pop him or something, but he doesn't.
It's also an homage to a scene in the 1944 noir movie Double Indemnity. Now, granted, it's a famous shot of the Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray, the two lead actors in that, in a supermarket together. Although the situation is a little different in the film, but every time there's a crime movie that's set in a supermarket, I always go back to Double Indemnity, if that makes sense.
That does, yeah. Well, Bob, we do get another scene, too, where a character from a previous episode is brought back. And I'll be honest, this was very creative in the way, or very clever in the way he was able to frame Janie in the conversation without us even knowing it was Janie until her name was brought up.
We have Yuritsa and then Dante's girlfriend, Carrie, and then Janie all having a conversation in Carrie's bedroom at Dante's party, right? It's a real slow roll until you realize it's our Janie or Martin's Janie.
They will not show her on camera, but they show her a little bit in silhouette, and then there's just some shadow on her face. You can tell it's a white girl at one point, but you don't know who. This is very cluttered.
The coked up tension of that scene is really interesting, too, where you have Janie trying to read Yuritsa, and Yuritsa, obviously this is a loaded term, but Yuritsa being inscrutable and then Carrie egging it on, right? And then escalating it to this bet where Yuritsa gets to beat on Janie. Matt, have you ever been either Yuritsa, Janie, or Carrie at a party?
I think I've been Janie and Carrie. I seriously doubt neither of us have ever been Yuritsa, though.
I was sort of like Janie and Carrie, like all at once. There was one party where a friend had driven me and wanted the keys to drive us home because he was ready to go. He was sober and I was very, very drunk. Uh-huh. But I didn't know where my bike were because he had the keys, right?
Right.
So I hadn't done anything with them. And I was also just in a surly mood where I didn't want to talk because I was that wasted. All I would say when he asked me where the keys were was hell, Satan. And so eventually he got so frustrated that he started wailing on me while I wheezed hell, Satan and laughed. And so in that moment, I was both Janie and Carrie. And then eventually he found the keys and like a gentleman, he apologized to me, but he said, you could have just said, Matt, so how do you feel about Yuritsa being the reincarnation of Jesus's mom, Magdalena?
All right, Bob, am I supposed to say this literally?
I think it's up to you. You could take it figuratively, you could take it literally.
It really creeps me out for the most part. I don't feel like she's literally the reincarnation, even though she looks just like her.
She is the high priestess of death, Matt. It's worth noting that she only shows up in the show after Magdalena is dead, right? Now, I mean, granted, everybody shows up in the show after Magdalena is dead, but there is the sense that she, Yuritsa and Magdalena have never been on screen together or anything, right?
It's real creepy.
It's not helped by Jesus creeping up on his mother slash wife like a tiger, like a sexual tiger. When that was happening, Matt, could you hear Billy Baldwin growl in your head?
And he literally tells her, I want to taste you, because he thinks that he's acting like it's his mom.
Matt, did you miss Martin from this episode?
Bob, you ask these kind of questions. Like, you can do character of the episode for this show, but you don't do it for the other show. Because they're all awful characters. I don't miss any. I'm not going to miss any of these people. Do I want to know what happened to Martin? Kind of, yes, Bob. I don't miss him, per se.
Let me frame the question as another way. At what point in the episode did you realize, I'm probably not going to see Martin this week?
I mean, it's become pretty clear that this show is set up this way where it focuses on single characters each episode. So I assume when we saw Jesus back, we're going to be focused on Jesus today.
Well, and if anything, the surprise is kind of when Janie, as you know, shows up, crossing you more back over to Martin, right?
Yeah, it's just trying to weave everything back together. So eventually, I guess in the final couple episodes, everything's all in one place. Well, Bob, the shot of the episode I have for the Nicholas Winda Griffish. I'm going to go with the entire drive-by scene, Bob. It's on a motorcycle. The music, the dancing, it's all there. It's beautiful.
It's a great scene. It's a great scene. There is a, in the party scene towards the end of the Too Old to Die Young episode, there's a statue in the hallway that Yuritsa's walking towards. And in the neon lights of the party, the statue like looks like a cyborg. It feels like you've gone into like a cyberpunk movie for a minute.
Yeah.
I really liked that. It was very creepy.
All right, Bob. So when it comes to character of the episode, I'm going to go with Jesus. And it's one scene we didn't talk about, where he completely demeans his underling after a job has been contracted out. And it keeps getting contracted out over and over again, and to the point where it's at the very bottom of the barrel, where it was like a crackhead who had to go complete the assassination attempt. And doesn't do a good job of it. He shoots the wrong guy. Then,
Matt, are you saying that this operation of contracting out is the perfect metaphor for how things get done in 2020s America?
Oh, yeah, Bob. The scene of the money being passed between hands at the beginning of this episode is exactly how, like, a great deal of most, like, actual contracted work is completed, and it's so stupid. And I know this because I had to have some work done when I sold my home. And the dude you talk to, the contractor, he'll then go and find some random guy to do it. It's cheaper than what I was paying the contractor. And then he'll go and he'll contract out a whole team of other little dudes who probably get paid a minimum wage to go actually do the job. I thought I was hiring a professional, but I did the contractor.
Nope.
Nope. Why do I need four middlemen to get to one? Where does all that money go? What are y'all being paid for, just to go find the people? It bothers me that that's an actual living for people.
In the immortal words of one of the guys who's involved in Eric Adams' corruption scheme in New York City, I need my crumbs, Matt. Where are my crumbs?
That explains a lot. So most people just don't do a whole lot. They just take the money and just delegate.
This is true. This is true. So for my character of the episode, I'm going to go with Magdalena. I thought the paintings of Jesus's mom, Magdalena, with what Morgan Fairchild described as her great shoes. I was debating, is this best shot or best character of the episode? But I decided to go with character. And then given that Yuritsa is the reincarnation of Magdalena, arguably I'm also saying Yuritsa is my character of the episode.
Good choice, Bob. Good choice. All right.
Well, thanks for joining us for Penguin versus Too Old to Die Young. Two more episodes to go on the Penguin. A third episode to go for Too Old to Die Young. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening.